hearing you loud and clear. The clock has started.
Five, four, three, two, one.
Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
Tuned in to this week's episode of our podcast. Today we are going to interview some of the greatest and most influential minds in our field. By sharing our collective expertise, we will show you how to harness, control, and use your own skill set to achieve ultimate success and live the life you want. And now, please welcome your host.
Welcome to this week's Smallest Cast podcast. This podcast is designed for small government contractors, service providers, and manufacturers as part of the government contractor ecosystem, connecting people, organizations, and resources. I'm your host, Just Nate, and this week in the room with us, we've got our CEO, Mr. Dennis Cater. Welcome, Dennis.
Thank you, Nate. Glad to be here.
And we've got a guest with us, Mr. Chris England. Welcome, Chris.
Thanks, Nate. Great to be here.
So Chris works with us, and he was bored this afternoon, so we said, hey, come sit in on a podcast and become known nationally and internationally.
Absolutely.
And our guest today, Dennis, we've got no other than Miss Carrie Palmateer, and she has a law firm called Palmateer Law. Welcome, Carrie.
Thank you.
So, Carrie.
Okay, we're laughing here. So it's a running joke. Nate never gets the names right. And so he did because we know Carrie.
I've only known Carrie for like 3 years.
So we actually got your name right.
As long as you don't look at the spelling of it, it's not that hard to pronounce.
But that's my problem. I always write them down. And then I'm like, is it Palmateer or Palmateer?
Just leave it. All right. So we're excited to have Carrie online because we've been talking about having her actually do a podcast with us for probably, since we've been doing this, actually.
Yeah, you and I have been talking. We haven't talked to her about it yet.
Well, we did when we met. We met with her. No, we met with her a couple months ago, remember?
Yeah.
Downtown. And so.
Yeah, you guys mentioned it beforehand, and then it was like, yeah, we'll figure it out eventually. And then it was this morning when you said, can you please talk to us afternoon?
Yes. we have been wanting to do this for a long time because a couple of reasons. One, you are involved with a lot of organizations, but really we want to talk to you about your home organization, Palmateer Law, and really what you do there and what you can provide to the small government contractor ecosystem. We know you play a major part in that ecosystem with regard to legal support and also getting people aware of the different aspects of policy and legal stuff. So we'll let you talk about that, but that's really exciting for me. I think a lot of stuff that you do is really good. So we'll get the word out now.
I was going to say, so the reason why I found that I enjoyed meeting with Carrie and talking with her originally is because she was kind of like you and myself. We are kind of busybodies. We aren't the ones that sit around. There's a handful of select people here in the community that if we go to any type of event at all, has anything to do with government contracting, you'll find a handful of us, the constant ones that are there at every single event. And that's kind of when the relationship started budding with Carrie and I, at least.
There's a lot of overlap across various groups and organizations around the state.
There is. So Carrie, so tell us about your firm.
So call it a firm? With my firm, I do. It's a firm. That's what they call law companies that provide legal services is a law firm. I set up about 4 years ago to help small businesses and to provide a resource that's affordable, but still yet be able to get them good quality help in the government contracts arena. And that's something I believe in because the small businesses just don't have access to the same resources as their larger counterparts.
True. I didn't realize that you had set up just 4 years ago. I thought you've been doing this for at least 5 years now.
No, November 1st was the 4-year anniversary.
Congratulations on your anniversary.
Thank you.
So Carrie, you're leaving a lot out there on the table here. So let's start back when you were born in Appalachia. No, just kidding. But let's start
in 1983.
Oh, you're being
nice. Thank you very much, Nate. I will take that.
So Carrie, talk to us a little bit. I know you're engaged with the small government contractor. What led you to that? And I know you're were in the service prior to this. You didn't mention that. And then really, what does your firm focus on? Because I know you have specific areas that you look at. So I threw a lot out there on the table just there. But
okay, so that I can go into. I don't want to talk, to hog the whole conversation.
We want you to hog. It's about you.
It's about you, and especially about you and your firm. Yes. We will pipe in now and then because we don't. It's boring for anybody to listen to one person talk.
Oh yeah, all the time. Trust me, I could talk for hours if you want to be.
You don't work with Nate.
So graduated from law school at University of Georgia School of Law. Go Bulldogs. Ended up in the military because I did not want to sit at a desk and do research. And ended up in my first assignment outside of Tokyo, Japan, where I was doing what we call tort law. So in other words, handling injuries and other claims between the Japanese citizens and Japanese government and our operations there at the base, and had a blast. Unfortunately, the only negative about living in Japan as your first assignment is that you have no money and no leave built up, which meant that you couldn't go anywhere and you had to stay at the base for most of it. But I was able to finagle a few trips.
Funny thing, you just kind of said that. Chris and I literally had that conversation just today in my office of somewhat of the same type of conversation about money in Japan and what the Japanese people spend their money on compared to what we spend our money on.
Absolutely. It's an expensive place to live for sure.
Oh, yes, it is. I mean, the good thing was that living on base with access to all the facilities, it wasn't as bad, and they give you a little bit of extra money a month. But, when I first got there, I spent the previous 7 years between undergrad and law school and was paying off loans. Well, actually, I got lucky. I still, back in those days, you could get, the government would pay for the interest on the loans for 3 years if you went into the military. So, but still, usually when you go into the military, you earn vacation time, like a day every month or something like that. And so it takes a long time to build up enough vacation to go on vacation. And of course, then you also have to have money to pay for the trip and everything else you want to do. And you're sitting there in the middle of Asia, on the edges of Asia, but it's kind of hard to get around. So, but having said that, I still did manage to go to China and Thailand and Malaysia and stuff and around Japan. And I will tell you, the best thing I learned in life is take advantage of whatever opportunities you can and just have fun. So find a way to do it. And then after that, I ended up at Los Angeles Air Force Base. So for any of you who have anything to do with the Space Force, Air Force, et cetera, that's one of the major acquisition centers for the government, where we would buy and service satellites, launch vehicles, the ranges, et cetera. And that's how I got into government contracting. Had a really good boss, although his intelligence could have been doubted because I was 4 years out of law school and he put me on the Titan launch vehicle program. So I was the government's attorney for a $2 billion a year program.
Nice.
Yeah. No idea of why he did that. I told him he was something crazy. Probably a little disrespectful considering the rank difference. But the good thing was that's one of the advantages about going into the military or the government even is you're allowed to do things that most corporations would never allow you to do. And that is, put a junior person on a very major program.
I agree.
Made mistakes. Everybody laughed at me, learned from my mistakes, and moved on. My last assignment in the military was DOD General Counsel's office, where I was able to do a lot of our overseas operations and support activities. And then I got out because I wanted to continue to specialize in government contracting and international. And they wanted me to go back and do regular JAG activities. So got out, went to work for a big law firm down on K Street in DC and realized that was not a good cultural personality fit and ended up at United Launch Alliance here in south part of Denver and spent 9 years there. K curious type again. What's that? What's that? Can I do? Can I do? Drove the engineers absolutely batty, but they learned to love me and had a wonderful time. Got to start doing subcontracts because you don't really deal with subcontractors when you're in the government. And then we had a change in leadership and major layoffs. So went out the door and then found that how hard small businesses have it. And that's how I decided to set up a practice that focused on helping small businesses and was able to bring the 20 years of expertise and be able to provide basically in-house services that would normally be unaffordable for the small business community. And that was kind of what led me down this path.
Carrie, are you a team of one or do you have other legal people helping you?
So I'm going to define team pretty broadly. I'm the only lawyer. I have a part-time virtual assistant through a company Siri? That uses veteran.
Is it Siri or Alexa?
Yeah, no.
we need one of those. We need to talk later.
Yeah, Carrie. No. It's actually a great company that uses military spouses and to provide back office support. So that way the military spouses, as they rotate around the world, have a consistent job that can follow them. And she does a great job. She keeps me straight. And then, of course, there's the small furry boss who's actually in charge of everything and dictates my schedule. And other than that, it is just me.
The what did you say?
Yeah, say that again.
Did you say small?
The small furry thing.
Oh, the small.
A cat.
I heard small fairy, and I'm like, she has a small fairy.
Small furry. Yes. No, the princess is the one who tells me what to do.
There you go.
There you go. So,
there you go.
Fur baby. That was a lot of information. I didn't know you were. Okay. So, let's back up. So when you were 5 years old, you said you started off your military career and you were stationed in Japan. Did you, do you speak Japanese?
I learned enough Japanese to be able to order sushi fluently and to find my way around, but no, I did not. I took classes, but unlike living in other foreign countries, when you're stationed overseas with the military, you live and work in English.
True.
And it's very hard to, you don't get full immersion. Correct.
And where'd you say you were in Yokosuka?
She was in probably Yokota.
Yokota.
Yeah,
I did 12 years down the road. Yeah, in Yokosuka.
Oh, did you? Yokosuka, yeah. No, we would go to the NEX there every once in a while because you guys had different.
Had different stuff, yeah. That's the same reason we would go to Yokota.
the Yokota was a great base. It's a logistics base. C-130 Hercules. So ugly, they're cute.
So Carrie, I wanted to actually go forward. So services you provide. Talk to us about today now with your firm. What services? Because you said, well, then I offer services to the. What types of services do you
do? So in the government contracting world, you have contracts that are under the federal acquisition regulations. That's what you normally think of. You can also have grants, agreements, other transactions, what we call CRADAs and everything else. Basically, any aspect of that that is within the government contracting arena is where I can help a small business. So it's narrow in that it's a niche practice. If you don't, you have to sell products, services, construction to the government, either directly or indirectly as a subcontractor. But within that world, it's a pretty broad niche.
Well, so give me an example. If I own my own small business and I want to hire you, what would I hire you for? Would I hire you to develop my like my first NDA template or how does that work?
So I can help with templates. I have NDA templates, non-disclosure agreement templates. I have contract templates, et cetera. We can tailor them, adjust them, but basically help you with your proposal. I don't write proposals for you, but like, let's say for example, in making sure you understood what the requirements were going to be or how to provide the language in your proposal to protect your intellectual property. Well, it starts at that stage.
I highly suggest if you're a small business, if you're a large business, if you don't have a lawyer to oversee and overlook at all the T&As, those is what usually gets companies in trouble that I've seen.
Yeah. And the TAs, the teaming agreements.
But the terms and agreements, not having a clue. I've heard of more small businesses going out of business because they didn't notice the one little clause in the terms and agreements that says, we're going to pay you net 45 or whatever. So you submit and they won't pay you for 45 days. Well, that's going to put any small business, or it could put any small business, completely out.
Yeah, no, their payment terms are always there, and the government tries to pay on time, but they're not always great about it. So yes, you do have to figure out your own cash flow, because, you know, the government's not going to pay, you're not going to have funding reimbursement for expenses for probably 2 months after you first start incurring them. But yes, no, reading the, understanding your reporting obligations, there's things in these terms and conditions that are, you know, reporting obligations, training requirements, posters,
data
things
rights
that have to go into your employee handbook and everything else. We focus heavily on the cybersecurity, you know, the big stuff that's out there now. Cybersecurity, and I'm sure you've had people on before that talk about cybersecurity and the CMMC. But
yeah.
So those are the highlighted ones. There's a whole bunch of non-highlighted.
I'm curious, do you offer, like, for the small business, because your clientele is really the small businesses, right? If I heard you right. Do you offer not a class, but more, no, I was thinking like a package. Like, if you pay me this, I'll help you. I'll give you an NDA template, a team agreement template. We'll help you with your book. Or is everything a la carte, or how does that work? I have no clue.
It's generally a la carte. I will do fixed price if we can scope the work, just like any service contract. But it's, what I do is, for example, if we're going to review a contract and you say, hey, Carrie, can you go through and tell me what I need to know that's hard in this contract? I actually have a separate database that I maintain that I can go in, I have my assistant check which clauses are on your contract, and then I can pull it out from there and be able to do it in a lot less time, because I don't have to go back through and read every clause again.
I did something wrong in my career. I don't have an assistant. I want to say, Chris, will you be my assistant?
That's why you hired me, I thought.
But hey, it's affordability, right? Because if you're paying me to go through and check the clauses versus having it in my rates where I have an assistant do it, it makes more sense. And then I can spend more time on things that you'd rather pay an attorney to do.
So did I hear you correctly say that that you advise on intellectual property? Do you also advise on patent law as well?
No. So that's actually a very good question, because there's a lot of areas where government contracts intersect with the commercial world, and that is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say, for example, you've got these brilliant engineers, scientist type sitting in your company, or you're one of those type and you own a company, and as you're sitting there doodling, a bright idea comes up. If you're doing it outside of the government contracting world, you go engage a patent law attorney, somebody who's registered with the patent and trademark office. They have to be a lawyer and a scientist or engineer. And they can decide whether you should file a patent, how to file the patent, and actually do all the patent paperwork for you. In the government contracting world, they don't know what the process is. Whereas I know what the process is if you come up with an idea in the middle of a government contract. And so then a lot of times you have to work with experts on both sides.
I'm curious though. If I am a company that is a government contractor and one of my engineers comes up with an idea.
That's what she's saying.
So, but I'm saying, because it falls in both realms, it's a commercial company.
It does.
For example, I worked at Honeywell for many, many years. And as an engineer, I had to sign paperwork that said any idea I come up with at all while on the clock is their property.
Absolutely. And every company should have every employee signing similar documents as part of their employment contract, because you do not, this is a free tip. Companies do not own the IP created by their employees just because they do it. The employee creates it in the performance of employment. Mm. You have to have them sign that kind of a document.
Huh. Hmm. We like free tips.
So, yeah, there you go. It's a free tip.
But so I do have a question about that, Carrie. What if it has nothing to do with anything that company does?
If you did it on, so this is where you probably would want to have a labor law attorney. But generally speaking, let's say you do it and you're sitting there and you're charging the company, and you're doing it during work time on the work computer and you're using the company resources. They could have an argument then that you did it.
Well, so I should be fired at that point because I'm doing
That makes a lot of sense.
Issues. Well, no. So
yeah,
Google.
Yeah, you got mischarging issues on that. But Google, I'm just saying that that's where it can get.
But a lot of companies nowadays, a lot of companies actually want you to go to the Lego room and play or have downtime where you think and do things.
No, you're that's where you're correct. But usually that's for thinking things.
No,
for the company.
Most companies, actually have policies that say basically you cannot use company resources for personal work, and right. that's
yeah. Which makes sense, especially on government contracting. That's a huge no-no. That's misuse of allocating time and everything else. So,
But if you're that kind of creative type, just be careful about what you're doing and where you come up with the idea. Come up with the idea, write it on a piece of paper, and take it home.
And make sure it's not on your company letterhead. Scrap piece of paper you use.
Yeah, but no, if you come up with an idea sitting on a government contract, there is a statute for small businesses called the Bayh-Dole Act, and then it was done as an equivalency for large businesses by executive order, but it requires that you report an invention and follow a whole bunch, like 30 different steps over the life of the patent. And if you follow those steps, you get to retain ownership, the government gets a license. But if you don't follow those steps, the government can come in and take ownership of your patent and give you nothing.
Nice.
And that's so, good to know.
That's
okay. Yeah, so that's you know, I hate being a doom and gloom lawyer, but there's a lot of stuff that's doom and gloom in government contracting.
Oh, yeah. Well, before we move on to any more of the doom and gloom, we're going to take a quick 30-second break.
More doom.
To hear from our sponsor. We'll be
right
back.
This podcast is brought to you by CHAFA, the Colorado Housing and Finance Authority. Since 1974, CHAFA has strengthened Colorado by investing in community development and affordable housing. CHAFA's community development team partners with lenders across the state to offer the financing you need to grow your business. Talk to your local lender about CHAFA's cash collateral support program, which helps small and medium-sized businesses access capital that would otherwise be unavailable due to collateral shortfalls. To learn more, visit chfainfo.com.
Welcome back to this week's Smallest Cast podcast. This week, we've got a cadre of people, but our main guest is Miss Carrie Palmateer from Palmateer Law. Welcome back, Carrie.
Thank you. Good for having fun with this.
It is a lot of fun. That's why I love doing it.
Hey, so yeah, because we got you talking about yourself, Carrie. It always works well that way.
It does. And if I could stop Dennis from eating on these podcasts, you hear just him opening candy wrappers nonstop or ripping paper. And I'm like, dude, I'm going to throw something at you.
So Dennis, you need to open them all up during the lead in and then just have them sit in others. So you don't have to open them each time.
Yeah. No, I'm doing it on purpose now. I'm ripping paper over the mic.
Because he's not the one that has to do post-production. That would be me, Carrie.
Well, for what it's worth, I can't hear it very well.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to ask you.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, so one of the things that small businesses really need to understand is that just getting the contract is easy kind of step. And I know it's not because it takes years, but don't just sign them and throw them in the drawer. You have to know your rights and your obligations. So you should read those contracts at least once and make sure you understand what those clauses mean. But I also wanted to point out, we have some great resources in the state, including our Colorado Procurement Technical Assistance Centers and our Small Business Development Centers that provide a lot of help and counseling and training at no cost for our small business community.
Yes.
So know your resources and educate yourself.
I try to push the PTAC as often as possible on these events. They
not that we have a bias.
No, not at all.
But they do offer some good services, and Carrie's throwing it out there because she does support PTAC. So if you are in Colorado and you need legal assistance and you go to the PTAC, you're likely to run into Carrie as she does support the PTAC.
I had a question. You can actually get some. I was going to actually plug. I'm doing an IP training on Monday morning to the PTAC if anybody is curious.
And why aren't you sending me these things, Carrie? So I can put it on the Smalls newsletter. I know, but
PTAC sends them out.
I try to get to them sometimes, but I also try to push it.
With PTAC about making sure we have calendars and things.
So where are you doing this, Carrie, and when?
It's a webinar. So you just sign up through the Colorado PTAC website to attend the webinar. And it's on data rights in a government contracting world.
Oh,
nice.
What, free information.
Yeah, short.
Very appropriate.
What time?
Yeah.
What time?
It's at 9 a.m. and it goes for a very few, just only 2 hours.
Ah, legalese for 2 hours. That's like, get me a drink.
It's happy. I can talk for a long time.
Happy hour 9.
Oh, gee. Can we, do you give everybody a copy of the FAR clause to take home too so they can do some homework with it?
I have been known to show my copy of the FAR, but no, when we used to do them in person, I would bring chocolate so that people would stay awake.
Oh.
Yeah, that's one thing about virtual meetings now. You can't really kind of, it's hard to keep people's attention. Matter of fact, I just watched a video on how to keep people's attention because, you know, you're sitting there watching stuff and all of a sudden, boop, something pops up on your email or whatever happens and you're
right.
Gone. It lasts about 15 minutes.
Oh, I call on people. Hey, I call on people.
Yeah.
I do. I warn them ahead of time that I'll be calling on you. And I do encourage people to keep their videos on. I don't care how you look.
I agree. However, I don't know if you guys notice this, but when we very first started this whole work from home thing back in March, April, May timeframe, I could not tell you how many meetings I was on with people that were laying in bed. And for some reason, it was always women. They would literally be sitting in bed. And I'm like, look, I get it. You made your bed. You're just kind of covered up in bed, have the laptop on your lap. I just don't want to see your bed. I just don't want to see it. It's just it's just kind of weird.
No.
Just go to the kitchen or something.
No, my theory on it is kind of like, you remember the 90s when you had the mullet haircut? Business in the front, party in the back?
Yeah, what's wrong with that?
Business, I have to say Nate top. Still has one.
Okay.
Not much party going on anymore.
Yeah. Business on the top, casual on the bottom. You know, look professional from the waist up. And you can wear whatever sweats, jeans, leggings, whatever you want to wear on the bottom.
Yeah. Hey, so I wanted to get back. I wanted to get us back on topic here. Not talking about things on the bottom. So Carrie, I wanted to ask you what's the biggest issue that you see out there for small government contractors as they're getting moving?
So,
where are they at?
As you saw earlier, that there's a thing in the government called category management. And what this means is basically that the government is now siloing how it buys certain products and services so that they're being bought by quote unquote experts on a single contract. And what that does is helps the government with its efficiencies, but
sure,
it harms small businesses. Yeah, exactly. But it harms small businesses because it reduces the quantity of opportunities for small businesses to get contracts.
Yep.
Having said all this, we're fighting the battle. We're raising the concerns. But I don't see a major change coming. I think maybe we might be able to affect a small amount of aspects, but small businesses need to learn, figure out how to work in this new environment, which in my mind primarily means, to quote one of my favorite people who happened to be on this phone call, find your competitors. You know, build relationships, get your partnerships together, be mates with your competitors. And that is going to be how small businesses will survive in the change towards category management.
So
thank you, Dennis, for that term. I've used it a lot.
So become a Dell provider.
Yeah. Well, I mean, part of it is also, so a lot of contracts get set aside for certain categories of small businesses. You know what? Ooh. Go find friends that are tribal companies that are 8As, that are women-owned small businesses, hub zones, and have, you know, be able to work together. Believe it or not, if you are one of those categories, one of the best things you can do is to know your competitors, because when the government goes out with a source of sought to find and do market research, if two or three of you come forth and say, hey, there are three of us 8A companies who can do this work, they then have to set it aside for that 8A.
Do they have to? Do they have to?
Yeah,
I just went through that recently, and we were looking at a proposal that came out, and we originally thought it was going to go small business because we know that at least two small businesses had responded to the source of sought. But when it came out, it did not come out small business.
So the small businesses have to be able to show that they can do the whole work, right? Whether sure. there's their teammates or something. So a lot of times it depends on how you answer that question. But yes, if there's enough that they have to set it aside for small business with 8A, your best bet as an 8A company is to one, respond to the source of sought, but two, go talk to the SBA, your business operations specialist, and make sure they know, because then it has to be set aside.
So would you, would you recommend going with a standard teaming arrangement, a prime sub, or would you recommend doing a JV with that 8A?
There's a whole bunch of pros and cons for each of those options. To be, I know a typical lawyer answer is it depends, right?
So can you, do you dabble in that side of the law too, to help you with mentor protege, JVs, all that kind of stuff?
All the small business regulations and compliance issues. Yes.
Nice.
Who owns you, who controls you, whether you can qualify to meet the certification requirements, how to do a joint venture agreement, doing the mentor protege agreements, all that. Yep.
We need to keep her on speed dial. That's all I know.
We have her on speed dial.
Yeah. No, one of the fun things I've gotten into this year has been helping law firms do due diligence checks in a merger and acquisition. So if a company is going to be buying a small business or a government contractor that has all the government contract reviews, is to help do the reviews of all those contracts to make sure that the target, the company being bought, has complied sufficiently.
Right before they, after they buy it?
Before
or
they
after,
actually get bought.
Before they buy
before
it.
Before they buy it. Yeah, and then depending upon how the relationship goes, a lot of the times I end up helping the purchaser and become their government contracts attorney afterward. But I'll tell you, some of those deals are very complicated.
Well, do those contracts have to be finished out under the old contractor name? Or can the new company also buy the contractor? How does that work?
Well, you can't buy a government contract. You can buy the assets associated with a government contract. But in these kinds of deals, then you have to do what they call a novation process under the FAR, and the government has to approve the transfer of the contracts.
Okay, Chris has something to say about that.
No, I'm just agreeing with her because I've seen it happen.
Well, so say
this. Yeah,
so,
and it's not quick. It takes months afterwards to get it approved.
So if a large company buys a small company, the large company assumes all the responsibility, right? And how does that work though? Because the contract was awarded to a small company, but now it's a big company. We have several in the building here that, one of them anyways, that just got bought.
Right. So if a contract was set aside for a small business, a large company the SBA, depending upon which small business category and such, but it has to be approved. A lot of times then, if it gets approved, it will not be allowed to have modifications to it or have options exercised because it wouldn't qualify. Sometimes they will, because believe it or not, like if you look at some of the major GSA contracts like Oasis and Soup and the rest of them that are set aside for small businesses.
Okay.
Well, if you are small when the contract is awarded, then you are small for the life of that contract, including any option exercises.
Right. Right.
So it can happen, but it's one of those things where the process to get a contract novated requires, there's 10 categories of documentation that have to be provided. And not only does the purchaser assume the obligations and rights under those contracts, but the seller still has to perform. Or no, sorry, the seller doesn't have to perform, but the seller remains liable. So
some
of the ways to set it up is that
what happens if the buyer removes 100% of the leadership of that seller?
Right. So if the company is not there, then it doesn't exist. But let's say you sell part of your business, right?
Yeah.
And it goes to those contracts. You're still liable for the purchaser's performance of those contracts. And if the purchaser defaults, then they could the government doesn't let anybody off the hook.
So,
and if you think about it, they're protecting taxpayer dollars. It makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. So, Carrie, what's the number one thing that small business are messing up on too? Can you talk about that? I don't know if we want to talk about
that. They don't
read
the contract.
Oh, that was easy.
They don't. The biggest thing that small businesses do that cause, so there's a high failure rate in the small business world with government contracts. I mean, there's a high failure rate with small businesses.
Period.
Period. Even outside of this current situation, but in the government contracting world, there's a high failure rate. And that's because they don't understand what it's like to do business with the government. They think it's just about getting contracts and that everything is going to be magical and revenue will come in.
Right.
And they get surprised somewhere down the road and find out that they didn't do things right. And then they end up being what we call defaulted, you know, either terminated for default or have horrible past performance and end up not being able to do government contracts.
Yeah, we've
and or going out of business because they didn't comply.
I've talked to so many small businesses. That's the exact thing that they say is, man, I almost lost the entire business because I didn't read my contract fully, or I didn't understand the contract, because I've tried to read, I've done government contract for 20 years and I'm not a lawyer, so I can't understand half the stuff in those.
That's where you got to hire Carrie.
No, that's where,
but I'm
talk
cheap.
With your consultants, but first and foremost, go to your PTAC and get help.
And ask for Carrie. There is
such a wealth of resources. Talk with other small business owners who have been going through it. And that's where, you know, Dennis and Nate, when you started it off, right?
Yep.
We keep running into each other because there's these networks and communities. And this is one of the things that where Dennis, when he first started the smalls, and, you know, and one of the reasons why I started coming and stayed with it is these are great ecosystems to help small businesses find those answers and those resources. Reach out, ask questions. Don't be afraid of being dumb. Because you're not asking a question that nobody else, that hasn't been asked before. It's just, you may not have known the answer. But understand what it is, because you may find that you're much better off staying in the commercial world and not coming into the government world, because it's not going to be worth the amount of revenue you're going to get. Profit margins on government contracts are not high.
Yeah. Carrie, do you do training only for PTAC, or do you do training just for companies?
So I will do free training through PTAC with companies and clients. Usually they pay me for my time. Of course, it's all negotiable, right? Everything's negotiable in life. But I try to, as Nate and I have hinted, we have a slight bias in that we're both on the board with PTAC. And that I try to funnel stuff through PTAC, because that's also where I do my pro bono work as an attorney, and I help counsel and provide training. And by doing my free training there, it encourages people to go to PTAC.
Dennis, did you see that? Did you hear that? Did you listen? How she chose her words very, very carefully there. That's what a lawyer does.
Lawyers tend to do that.
She's not like me or most guys I know, just kind of blurt whatever's on top of your head.
Well, as you guys both know, though, I can have completely unfiltered conversations.
hey, Carrie.
This is not appropriate in a podcast.
That's when Sailor Carrie comes out.
hey, Carrie, I maybe I'm overthinking this, but I'm going to take us in a little bit different direction. Is there anything unique to small business manufacturing that you run into in terms of common problems?
Not necessarily, other than the fact of there's a growth issue, right? You know, once you get big enough, you've kind of learned your mistakes, you've survived your mistakes, and you've set up the systems. Small businesses haven't set up all those systems. And so, but manufacturing by itself, you still have to comply with the rules. I'd say, you know, one area of manufacturing that's not always obvious is what we call, refer to as domestic sourcing requirements. In other words, all of your products and parts that you use to do the manufacturing have to meet the criteria for American or various other agreements to be sourced from countries that we approve of.
Yep. On top of that, that used to be a couple of years ago, is the Rojas compliant. Everything must have been Rojas compliant. And then all of a sudden I said, well, maybe not, because it was costing way too much money to change every drawing out there for... what? So,
well, and the thing is that with that kind of stuff, it's like, okay, fine. I can, sure. All my stuff is coming from the United States. Well, how do you know?
Yeah.
Cause if you haven't surveyed your supply chain and you haven't asked those questions and verified, you don't know.
Or put it in the term and agreements or the clauses down to your subcontractor or whoever's your supplier.
Correct.
Is.
Yeah. But if you, it's so
you don't create policies and you don't create documents just because. You do it to protect yourself so that if you ever get challenged by the government as to being, as you know, the government comes in and says you're violating the law, now you've got the proof that says, no, you're not. Or here's the steps you took to verify that your actions were valid.
Yeah, yeah. Transparent and auditable.
Uh-huh. So unfortunately, you never know which one is going to be challenged, so you have to do it all the time.
On Chris's question, though, I think what's going to bite the manufacturers, especially the small manufacturers right now, is CMMC. Because CMMC is not just going to be for the big boys.
Yeah. So that's where I was going with that. That's where I was, you're ahead of me, Nate.
Yeah, so manufacturing is complicated, right? Because we're relying more and more on robots, and especially like with CNC shops, the more your equipment is linked to the internet versus staying in an isolated, core, disconnected system, the more you have internet connection, the more you're going to have compliance with cybersecurity rules. And manufacturing is moving so much to electronics that, and it's more efficient and quicker to have everything connected, you know, the wonderful internet of things, but that brings it additional risk. And that is something that businesses need to think about if that is their type of manufacturing versus assembly.
Well, even assembly, the way I understand CMMC is in the next couple of years, even if you're just a supplier, that's going to be in the term and agreement being flowed down to you that you
right.
have to be
but you're,
at least at whatever level that is required in the contract.
So, yeah, but one of the ways to not have to comply with CMMC is to, one, not get the data that resubjects yourself to those requirements, or two, segregate it into a small number of systems and not have it spread throughout your company. It's just easier to manage. So if your production line does not have electronics on it, there's no robots, there's no software, CAD, et cetera, it might be a little bit easier. But you're right. The people who are bringing in, you know, who receive the contract documents, who receive the specifications and the requirements, those computers might have to be CMMC compliant. So there's ways to set up your system within the company to reduce the impact of the CMMC requirements.
Yeah, I think it's going to behoove people to just go and get certified, CMMC certified, because
hey, I'm going through the process right now.
It means that you're going to be a distinguisher between everybody, all the other lawyers out there right now. If you're up out there first, that means they have a smaller pool to pick from.
Yep. No, we're in the final stages. I've been working with Devil Dog to get my system completely compliant, and I'll tell you, it's a pain in the neck, and it scares me to death. Well, the more you know, the more paranoid you get.
That's why we have experts like Devil Dog. Call Devil Dog, and they'll get it handled for you.
And Carrie, lawyers and cyber people.
They're going to rule the world.
It's just, in the future, I've told a couple law school students that if you want to do business law, government contracts, whatever, great. Make sure you understand data privacy, cybersecurity laws too, because that is going to be our future.
Which is a good lead-in, Carrie, to talk about one more time, because we're going to close up here in a few minutes, about the course. So IP, and you're going to talk data as well, I'm assuming, on your course on Monday.
Yes, I'm not talking cybersecurity. Believe it or not, in 2 hours, we will just cover the rules associated with protecting your technical data and computer software.
I believe it.
Yeah.
We will not be getting into the whole host of all the, what we refer to as FAR Part 27 or cybersecurity or information technology type rules.
Do you have anything coming up after that? After, because this is going to go out soon.
Yeah, so we do. January 20th, we've got a brand new course that we're doing. We're still completing all of it, but we're going to have a 3 hour or so SBIR, SCTR panel where we're going to have a variety of experts, legal experts, commercialization, and the generic SBIR program requirements.
Nice. And you're doing that at Catalyst Campus?
I think we're going to be still doing it virtual because I don't know how much in-person stuff we'll still be having in January. But yeah, we've got Mike Anderson from, we've got Mike Anderson from Relicent coming in, myself, and this will be done through Colorado PTAC, so it's on their website. We also have one of my clients, Advanced Space, who has received a couple SBIR phase three, including a $13 million one out of NASA to build and operate a satellite to test out some activities. And they'll be coming in to talk about lessons learned as a, from a practical standpoint.
Nice. We had them on our podcast earlier this year.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah. So Carrie, how do, I will put something out on that, but how do people get a hold of you, Carrie?
Okay.
Cause they're going to want to know this now. Cause this was a great conversation.
Yeah. So I'll tell you, branding is good. It's all in my name. So if you can spell my name, you can get everything you want about me. It's K-A-R-R-I. And then the last name that we've already talked about is P as in Papa, A-L-M as in Mike, E-T as in Tango, I-E-R. And so my email is carrie@palmateerlaw.com. And my phone number is 303-697-8914.
And you have a website too, right?
I do. It's palmateerlaw.com. And I'm on LinkedIn. But if you Google my name, you'll find a whole bunch. The first page is just all me.
You have very good marketing. Multiple personalities. Is that what you're saying?
I do. Yeah. No, I haven't. I'm too old.
Hey, Dennis is older than you, and we just created all those accounts for the smalls.
But that's because I don't have a wonderful person like you, Nate.
Well, we hired it done. I just don't have time anymore. And
I know. No,
the whole Facebook thing, I don't even want to get into that. It's driving me nuts trying to get a business page
on Facebook. I did Facebook, and I had like 100 people following me. None of them were potential clients. I don't even know. I don't think they understood what I did when they agreed to follow me. I think they just clicked follow on everything that popped up.
Did you put on there that you were single or something?
I have no idea. But I closed that out. I'm on LinkedIn. That is, I basically, to the extent that I blog or write articles and stuff, I do it through LinkedIn.
Right.
And that's where I announce things that are coming up. So that's a way to follow me and get information.
Okay.
But otherwise, yeah, I'm pretty accessible around out there.
Okay. Sweet. And also, if you need to get a hold of her, you can get a hold of us at the Smalls. Just go to the website, www.thesmalls.org. And there's some comment boxes there. Just ask about Carrie, and we will put you in touch with her as well.
Or you can email us directly at smallscolorado@thesmalls.org or just nate@thesmalls.org. And Carrie, I want to say thanks for coming on and kind of talking a little bit about small business government law, because it's something that I know a lot of people don't have in their background and a lot of people are scared of. So it's a good thing to chat about it and get the word out. Not only for small businesses, shoot, for even for bigger companies that might not have a full-time lawyer on staff. So
I like this government contracting stuff, but I'm a geek.
Yeah. We've all kind of like it. That's why we're here, I guess. So, but with that, I do want to say thanks for coming on the show. And for all you listeners out there, go contact Carrie. She gave her all of her contact information. The contact information will be in the body of the podcast on all of your podcast listening apps. So with that, Carrie, I appreciate it again. Thank you, Chris, for joining us today.
Absolutely.
And Dennis, as always, we'll chat again next week. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Thanks for listening.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Smallscast podcast. Connect with us at thesmalls.org. Don't forget to sign up to our newsletter to receive our free materials. See you at the next episode.
See you at the next episode.